We all know the standard take on the summer of love, that in 1967, hippies appeared as if from nowhere, and rock music reached a height it had never before achieved. Well, music critic Ed Ward says the historians have it all wrong, and three recent DVDs help prove his point.
In February 1967, I got a magazine to send me to San Francisco. I was working at Crawdaddy magazine and living in the office in Greenwich Village, and the editor, Paul Williams, couldn't stop talking about the music he'd heard when he'd gone there the previous fall. I couldn't wait to see it all, so much so that I didn't bother to think the trip out, and as I was leaving the office on my way to the airport, the guy in the apartment next door appeared. We didn't know him, we just knew that he had really long hair and his name was Chan. He asked me where I was going, and when I told him, he asked me if I had a place to stay. I didn't. Okay, he said, and wrote an address on a piece of paper. These are friends of mine. When you get there, ask for Luria. I'll call them and tell them to expect you. In retrospect, the introduction Chandler Laughlin gave me to Luria Castell, Ellen Harmon, Lynn Hughes, and Alton Kelly at the beautiful old Victorian house I arrived at some hours later plunked me down in the middle of a piece of American cultural history that Mary Works has resurrected in a remarkable film about the bar these people and their friends, who also included her parents, ran in Virginia City, Nevada, starting in the summer of 1965. The Red Dog came into being when Mark Yanofsky's father warned his ne'er-do-well son that he'd better find something to do with his life, whereupon Yanofsky talked his dad into buying a building in downtown Virginia City that he could get his friends to turn into a retreat from their lives as students and workers in San Francisco. A number of them, including Don Works, a former house painter, had already moved to Nevada, and he talked others, most notably Chandler Laughlin, who'd run folk music coffee houses, into joining the team. The idea was to open a bar with live music and great food so they could all make money and continue to live the way they wanted to, which included smoking a lot of pot and having fun. Laughlin recruited a chef, Jenna Warden, a mistress of ceremonies, Seattle folk singer Lynn Hughes, a dishwasher, former political radical Luria Castell, and a gigantic bouncer, a Washoe Indian named Mike Jones, and then found the band that would provide the entertainment, a well-dressed quintet from San Francisco, who called themselves the Charlatans. The Red Dog Saloon, as it was called, opened in June 1965. The Charlatans played mostly electrified folk music, a trend just getting underway, most notably with the Byrds in Los Angeles. All of them were inspired by Bob Dylan, who had spent that spring touring England, saying goodbye to his protest-singing folky past, a tour captured by filmmaker D.A. Pennebaker in a film which was released in 1968 under the title Don't Look Back, and which is now out on DVD with an entire extra hour's worth of outtakes. Pennebaker is entitled Bob Dylan 1965 Revisited. At the time of the tour, Dylan had already recorded an album, half electric and half acoustic, called Bringing It All Back Home, and had released a rock and roll single called Subterranean Homesick Blues, which pointed his work in a whole new direction. In a famous scene from the film, Dylan, with Allen Ginsberg lurking in the background dressed as a rabbi, stands tossing cards with key words from the song as it plays on the soundtrack. An early music video.
John is in a basement mixing up the medicine. I'm on a pavement thinking about the government. The man in a trench coat batch out laid off says he's got a bad cough, wants to get it paid off. Look out, kid, it's something you did. God knows when, but you're doing it again. You better duck down the alleyway looking for a new friend. The man in a coonskin cap in a pig pen wants $11 bills. You only got 10. Maggie comes fleet-foot, face full of black soot, talking at the heat, put plants in the bed, but the phone's tapped anyway. Maggie says the men say they must bust an early man. Orders from the DA, look out, kid, don't matter what you did. But walk on your tiptoes, don't tie no bows. Better stay away from those that carry around a fire hose. Keep a clean nose, watch a clean clothes. You don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows.
When the Red Dog's first summer was over, the Charlatans returned to San Francisco, as did Alton Kelly, Luria Castell, and Ellen Harmon. Inspired by what they'd just been through, in October, they formed a company called The Family Dog. And on October 15th, they rented Longshoremen's Hall and put on a dance with music by the Charlatans, the Jefferson Airplane, and a band that lived a couple of doors away from the Charlatans, the Grateful Dead. The San Francisco Chronicle's jazz critic, Ralph J. Gleason, covered the event and noticed that the dancing went on nonstop, as if people's lives depended on it. Gleason was astonished, but he was also savvy enough to know that something was happening in his city as folkies began going electric and writing their own material. In December, Bob Dylan and his new band showed up to play some dates in Northern California, and Gleason, who had a program, Jazz Casual, on the local non-commercial television station KQED, invited Dylan to a press conference which was taped and broadcast, and now released on DVD. Salting the audience with friends of Dylan's like Allen Ginsberg and interested parties like the business manager of the San Francisco Mime Troupe, Bill Graham, Gleason refereed nearly an hour's worth of inspired repartee from the 24-year-old songwriter. Graham, no fool, had presented Dylan with a poster for a show he was promoting on behalf of the Mime Troupe, featuring a number of local bands. Dylan read off the names and said with a grin that he'd be busy that night, but otherwise he'd like to be there. Graham's poster was very standard, pictures of the bands laid out in a grid. But Alton Kelly of the Family Dog was a trained artist, and soon the dog's weekly dances were announced with posters that became increasingly sophisticated. By the time the Red Dog opened again in 1966, this time with Big Brother and the Holding Company, who hadn't yet met Janis Joplin in residence, the San Francisco scene had already been born, and the sense of community, the innocence, and the feeling of creating a new society were already a year old. By the time the media's Summer of Love came along, they were already in retreat. But, as Luria Castell says at the end of Rockin' at the Red Dog, they never really disappeared.
I always perceived in retrospect that those experiences, especially our experimentation with psychedelics and peyote and such, and with pot, wasn't a free ride. That, yes, it was gloriously good fun, and it opened our lives to many things. Some of it turned sour for some people who overindulged, in it, which is true of any substance. But the perspective we gained that Buddhist monks take maybe 20 years to achieve in deep meditation, we got in 45 minutes, and I always felt there was probably a reason for that in a generational sense. But I don't think our whole story is finished yet. It hasn't all been played out here. And there was reasons why we went through that stuff then. And as I said, it wasn't a free ride, and there was some responsibility for that insight. And you'll hear more from us before it's done.
I, for one, hope she's right.
Ed Ward lives in Berlin.